You're listening to the WTA Insider Podcast. Ready? Play.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the WTA Insider Podcast. I'm Courtney Nguyen, senior writer for WTA Insider at WTATennis.com, and I'll be your host on this podcast, where we take you closer to the players and all the action on the WTA Tour.
Well, on this episode, we break down the draw at the Mutual Madrid Open, which is set to begin on Saturday, May 6th. And it's a very interesting draw. It's a very exciting draw. I have, once again, joining me on the line from WTA headquarters in St. Petersburg, Florida, WTA web editor David Kane. Hello, David. Welcome to the pod once again.
Hola, Courtney.
Yeah. David's just making fun of me because my Spanish is a bit of an embarrassment, and I'm not even going to try and pretend to speak it because I think I will just end up insulting many, many, many people.
So, it would be a grande accidente.
It would be. Oh, who knew? I am fluent. I understood exactly what you said. But yes, I am here in Madrid for the Madrid Open, and so far things have been very exciting. We had the exhibition event, which I will admit this, I wasn't too sure about it. The tiebreak tens, which took place on Thursday, it involved eight of the tour's top women, including Simona Halep, Svetlana Kuznetsova, Maria Sharapova, Madison Keys, Agnieszka Radwańska, and a few others. And it actually ended up being a really, really entertaining event. It was for charity. The proceeds of the event went to a domestic violence charity. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. At the end of the day, it was Simona Halep rolling through her tiebreak sets, quote unquote. Basically, it was a bunch of quote unquote matches that were played in a super tiebreak format. So one first player to 10. And it was Simona Halep who, as we keep saying, is playing some pretty good ball on this red dirt. And she went and beat Svetlana Kuznetsova in the final to take that home. So a very nice start for Simona Halep, a nice return for the defending champion in Madrid to kick off her tournament. And today during All Access Hour, she was asked about it. And she said, look, it's actually kind of nice that I got to play that event because for me, I kind of feel like I'm into the tournament already. I feel like my tournament already started. You know, I'm into, you know, a little bit of rhythm and things. She's been here since Tuesday. So, you know, it'll be a pressure-filled week for Halep. But as we go through this draw, I think this is a pretty good draw for Simona to make a good attempt and a good effort at defending her title here in Madrid. But let's take a step back and let's look at the draw on the whole. Top eight seeds, you know, there's a little bit of a reshuffle today. We're recording this on Friday evening. Just with Agnieszka Radwańska, who was the number eight seed. She withdrew from the tournament after the draw was made due to a right foot injury. Agnieszka Radwańska also confirming that she's also going to pull out of Rome as well, primarily because she wants to be as healthy as she possibly can for the French Open. It's been a very long time since Aga has missed the main draw at a slam or skipped out of a slam due to injury issues. So she wants to keep that intact. But in order to do so, she needs to let this kind of inflamed foot injury heal up. She says that she's been dealing with it since last year, and it's gotten worse and worse this season. So she'll be taking the next couple of weeks off, which will be good rest for Aga. But with Radwańska's withdrawal, the top eight seeds are top seed Angelique Kerber, number two seed Karolina Pliskova, number three seed defending champion Simona Halep, number four seed Dominika Sabalenka, number five seed the hometown girl, or partially hometown girl, she's not from Madrid, but Garbiñe Muguruza, number six seed Johanna Konta, number seven seed, number eight seed, but bumped into the seventh spot is Svetlana Kuznetsova, and rounding it out is Madison Keys. As the draw kind of panned out, obviously Kerber sits atop of the draw. The top seeds that have been drawn into that top half are Sabalenka, Kuznetsova is also up there, as well as Madison Keys. She also has a few other very dangerous floaters In that draw, some unseeded, some seeded. Seeded includes Kristina Mladenovic, obviously making the final last week in Stuttgart. Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova into a final this weekend is also floating in there, as well as Alina Svitolina, the number 11 seed. Kuznetsova is also up there. And of course, a name that many will be continuing to track, regardless of the fact that she is unseeded and will probably be unseeded for, you know, at least the short-term future, is Maria Sharapova, who's also in the top half of the draw. Bottom half of the draw led by Karolina Pliskova. Alongside her, we have Halep is in there, Muguruza is in there, as well as Johanna Konta. Caroline Wozniacki also in the bottom half of the draw, as well as Elena Vesnina, Barbara Stritsova, and Samantha Stosur. So that's kind of how the seeds generally shook out in the draw. You know, it's a very interesting draw. A lot of popcorn first round matches, a lot of potential popcorn matches in the second round as well. But before we get into kind of the minutiae, I guess, David, when you woke up this morning in Florida, the draw had been completed. You open it up, you take a look, you scratch your temple a little bit, and you think what?
Ay, Dios mío. I think I'd be lying if I didn't say I didn't hone in on where wildcard Maria Sharapova landed. Given how she performed in Stuttgart, it seems that she, even though she is going to be unseated, she's certainly probably going to be unseated and looming for the next several weeks, playing on her favorite surface, is a former Madrid champion, drawing a surging Mirjana Lucic-Baroni, who, though she lost in the first round in Stuttgart to eventual finalist Kiki Mladenovic, has had a solid enough start to her clay court season, reaching the semifinals in Charleston. Sharapova and Lucic-Baroni have played just once back in, I believe, 2011, and Sharapova won in straight sets at the French Open. So it was on clay when they played. So that will be an interesting match, probably a lot of big hitting in that one. You have to look at perhaps the winner of that playing either Alize Cornet or Eugenie Bouchard. Both of those players will be looking for some rhythm, particularly Bouchard, who has yet to win a match since Australia. And then all eyes then looking on Angelique Kerber, who lost in her opening match in Madrid last year, who lost a tough one to Mladenovic in Stuttgart, will be trying to really get her mojo going on outdoor red clay, as she has been unable to do in the last year or so. Decent enough first round against Tamea Babos, who could perhaps click into form, but hasn't really been the Babos that we were starting to see this time last year. I think that some of the consistency is not entirely there right now, and so that would be an interesting match of any combination or any permutation, be it Sharapova-Kerber, Lucic-Baroni-Kerber, you know, Cornet or Bouchard against Kerber, or even Siniakova, who's been playing pretty well this year as a potential matchup looking down the line. So that first immediate section is where I looked. It is where most people tend to look when they look at draws for the first time. But I think you would agree that this is probably the most interesting in the Madrid draw.
Yeah, yeah, that section is definitely the most interesting and the most compelling. A lot of people, you know, circling or hoping for a second round match between Sharapova and Bouchard. Obviously, that was a French Open semifinal back in 2014. You know, even though that is a potential second round match, I do think that that's a long way to go before we get there, simply because I do think that that's a really tough draw for Sharapova in the opening round against Lucic-Baroni. It's one thing if this was a first round in Rome or even, you know, in Paris, but here in Madrid, which is a tournament that rewards big hitting tennis, especially flat hitting tennis at times, that can be a potentially difficult one and a tough player to feel like you have any control over as a Agnieszka Radwanska can testify to, given how many times she's had to draw her this season. So you know, we'll see. But you're right. Any permutation of that section is going to be a really, really interesting one. And it's not an easy draw for Kerber. Mathematically, Angelique Kerber has a very good chance of returning to number one before the French Open, with Serena Williams's points from Rome dropping off a week early after Madrid. But, you know, that ascension could come at a bit of an odd time for Kerber, because this is really the section of the season that she struggles at the most, especially since, you know, the last like 3 years or so, three straight first round losses or opening round losses for Kerber in Madrid, has only made the quarterfinals or better once. It's just been a tournament that she struggled at, and she was pretty candid about it, to be quite honest, in All Access Hour today. And she said, you know, this is not a tournament I do well at. I don't really know why, but, you know, maybe if, you know, me losing early in Stuttgart is good, because normally I come in straight from Stuttgart And that adjustment from indoor, you know, clay to outdoor can be tough, especially with the altitude. But she said, I have very low expectations here. And that's kind of the first time that I've really heard Kerber say that in a really long time since her rise, you know, going into a tournament and saying, I don't know. So that's an interesting insight into her mindset.
It's interesting with Kerber on clay because, you know, one of those things where you kind of remember a player performing well on a certain surface or at a certain tournament, and it can kind of color your view of that player. I mean, we all remember Kerber's breakthrough at the 2011 US Open, but it really wasn't until the spring of 2012 where she really started to come into her own and break into the top five. And it really looked like at that point she was going to make a push. I remember her playing really well in Stuttgart, making the semifinals in Rome that year, and looking like a potential dark horse to even win the French Open. And since then, we've come to know her as being a much better performer on hard courts and grass and indoor tournaments. But it's you can't help but think back on those previous results and think if they do it once, there's something in them that should allow them to do it again, and for one reason or another. And so there's no reason to feel completely pessimistic, but in the mindset and in the form that Kerber's in, it's really hard to really prognosticate where she will land this week in Madrid, particularly with the some of the tough opposition in her section.
Yeah, and even when you get out of that section, you know, there is a name that is definitely floating in her quarter that is a name that she would probably prefer to stay away from as much as possible, which is number 11 seed Alina Svitolina, who is a potential, you know, quarterfinal opponent for Kerber. And Svitolina would likely have to get through a Kuznetsova, who I think is a bit rude to call her a dark horse at this point, you know, not just for this title, but for any title on the clay season. Mm-hmm. I think she's just playing the ball and it's so comfortable these days. I mean, she's feeling great. She's feeling confident. So that's an interesting section there for Svitolina and Kuznetsova, who could potentially meet in the third round. But there's a part of me that kind of thinks the winner of that match might be the one that gets through into the semifinals here, if not the final, out of this top half of the draw. Because if once you step back from that, and you look at the second quarter of the draw, which is anchored down by number 4 seed Dominika Sabalenka, finalist here last year, and number 9 seed Madison Keys, you know, you can see a situation, Sabalenka obviously coming off of a tough wrist injury that ruled her out of Stuttgart, Madison Keys playing in her first clay court event of the season. And then, you know, in there, obviously, you have Mladenovic, Pavlyuchenkova. Pavlyuchenkova could be tired by the time that she gets here and be a little bit vulnerable there. So you're really looking at, I don't know, I think either a Svitolina, Kuznetsova, or a Mladenovic kind of making it out of this top half, if unless, you know, a Sharapova can kind of find her legs, in which case, and her game in Madrid, in which case she's also definitely throwing her hat in the ring in that discussion as well.
It's funny with Kuznetsova because I think partly because her whole ethos through her career has been the sort of unpredictability and you never know what you're going to get from me. I might be ranked in the top 10, top 20, top 30. You never really know. It's been a year or so, or maybe even 2 years tracking back to 2015 when she made the final here in Madrid, that she's had a really good string of consistent high level results. And I think it's kind of safe to say, as safe as it has ever been, to say that she's a top player again. And I remember feeling that sense in Madrid, where I think even Kuznetsova has been a bit surprised that the reaction to her is still so ambivalent in terms of her chances of perhaps making title runs or making the final. I feel like people are still treating her as a comeback story. And I mean, this is a woman who just made the Indian Wells final. She made the Miami final last year. She's made a premier mandatory final, at least one, the last 3 years in a row. She made Singapore last year. She's a player capable of some big time results. And so I think we need to really start treating her as such. Having said that, I do think she has a really solid draw. It'll be interesting to see how Svitolina converts her Istanbul title into a big tournament here. Obviously, we saw earlier in the year the way Svitolina was able to ride the momentum from Taiwan, the Taiwan Open, into the Dubai Duty Free Tennis Championships and win her biggest title there. And then moving down to the Sabalenka, Mladenovic, Pavlyuchenkova Keys section, I mean, I think if Sabalenka had any other draw, I would be feeling pretty pessimistic about her chances, given that she was injured in Stuttgart and couldn't play there. Has a pretty decent draw getting Jelena Jankovic, who's unfortunately not the Jelena that we are used to seeing as a former number one, lost her first round in Prague last week, or this week, I should say. And so should she play her way into form by the time she potentially plays a Mladenovic? I think we might maybe see her kind of click into gear a little bit, you know, obviously comfortable on the surface as a former finalist. But I think you do have to look at Mladenovic as maybe one of the favorites to make it out of this quarter as really one of the most informed young players to start the season. I think it's funny when we think of, like, you know, I think a Dominic Thiem, for example, on the men's side gets a lot of hype and a lot of recognition when, but if you compare his results to Mladenovic, they're pretty similar. And if anything, Mladenovic have been more consistent, especially as the clay court season has started. So I think you do have to kind of look at her in the same way that you look at Kuznetsova, or as two players, doubles partners, that you are coming to expect big results from. And it'll be interesting to see what they can do this week in the Caja Magica.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you and I discussed this when we did, you know, the heat index rankings, and a little bit when we discussed the clay court power rankings, because so much of what, especially these first few tournaments on tour, on clay, so much of the storyline will be who can actually transition whatever momentum they had from the hard courts onto clay, and who can't. And so far, things have kind of held to form with respect to you and I, what we said, you know, last month, of we're going to see, because we don't know. And so far, you know, we have seen those players who are, you know, leading, you know, at the top of the leaderboard in the Porsche race to Singapore, you know, the hard court stalwarts, the Pliskovas, the Kontas, the Wozniackis really stumble once, you know, or hit the brakes, as it were, now that things turn to clay. And then you start to see some of the clay court stalwarts, like the Halleps, you know, starting to play better. Ziegemund, obviously, doing what she does, Akasitkina, you know, winning Charleston. You're starting to see a little bit more of that. There are, though, a handful of players who have, at least through, you know, right as Madrid is about to start, have shown that they can transition their hard court game onto clay court, or at least the momentum. And that one would be Mladenovic. Another would be Svitolina. Even a Halep, I think she started to gain more momentum towards the end of the hard court season in Miami, and she's transitioned to that pretty well. I think that with Mladenovic, she's definitely one to watch. And David, I mean, you know, we didn't get to talk too much about Kiki after Stuttgart. She has obviously been a regular feature on the podcast after winning, you know, St. Petersburg, great run, obviously, in Acapulco as well. What do you make of Mladenovic's rise in 2017? Because she has been one of the storylines of the season so far.
You know, I think you really have to, in situations like this, if possible, listen to the player and listen to what the player is saying. And I think since the beginning of the year, certainly since St. Petersburg, when we started to hear a lot from Kiki winning her first title and then making a final in Acapulco, semifinal in Indian Wells, this is a time in her life where she is not playing with a coach, and she is relying, in her own words, solely on instinct. And she feels that she is a player with an all-court game who it can be very creative, who can improvise. And I think those are things you were seeing a lot, particularly in Stuttgart, you know, in the tough moments against Sharapova, or even in some of the tougher moments against Ziegemann in the final, though it didn't end up going totally her way. It was a really tough match, and certainly had as good of a chance of winning as Ziegemann did, you know, showing some of her craft and guile, some of the, you know, shocking winners she's able to pull off. She did win this month's shot of the month from the shot that she hit in the final at the Porsche Tennis Grand Prix. And I think right now things seem really clear for her. She's not overly clouded with maybe other voices, other coaches that maybe were telling her to play a different kind of way. She's backing up the talk, I think, you know, as a player who usually has a lot to say and is very open with all of her opinions. I think we're seeing her back it up in an impressive way to start the year and really be one of those consistent young forces that we kind of always thought that she should have been maybe sooner, was maybe starting to lag behind some of the other players in her generation, but is making up for lost time in a really impressive form and in impressive fashion. And so given the draw that she has, I think there's no reason to think that she can't maybe get another premier mandatory quarter or semi out of this week.
If you haven't had a chance, I highly recommend going back and listening to the Champions Corner with Kiki after she won St. Petersburg, because she does go into a bit of depth about just how she thinks on the tennis court. And we, as people who cover her and are charged with tracking her, it's our responsibility to really understand that she does see things a little bit differently, and she sees her game a little bit differently, and just the game a little bit differently. She sees angles and shots that I don't think a lot of players see. And when they're on, it's beautiful, spectacular stuff. And when they're off, you know, they can be very, very quick losses. But turning now to the bottom half of a draw, again, headlined by Pliskova and Konta, as well as Halep and Muguruza. Again, another interesting draw, a draw that seems to contain all of the players that were really the players we talked about a lot during the hard court season. So obviously, Konta, Miami champion, Wozniacki, her fantastic run through the hard courts to start the season. Halep a little bit less so, but obviously towards the end in Miami started to play better tennis. Muguruza, for as much as she struggled with injury, has been able to, when she hasn't been injured on the hard courts to start the season, she's played more consistently than I think that, you know, we definitely didn't see this level of consistency last year. So, you know, she was a bit of a storyline in terms of a bit more of a resurgence on the hard courts. Elena Vezina, obviously, Indian Wells champion. Say it again for the people in the back, David Kane.
Go on. The BNP Paribas Open champion to you, Courtney.
That's right. I apologize. I apologize for the disrespect.
March's WTA Player of the Month to you, Courtney.
How many times did you vote on that? Be honest. Be honest. I would like to know. I would like to know how many times.
I'm not registered to vote.
wise. But yeah, obviously Barbara Strizova always a threat on hard courts. And then, of course, number one in the Porsche race to Singapore, Karolina Pliskova, you know, who has a chance, a mathematical chance, if she can figure out a game on clay, to take the number one ranking from Angelique Kerber, you know, over the next few weeks, which is pretty exciting stuff for her. These are the players that did well on the hard courts. Are they going to do it on the clay? So far, signs seem to point to no with early losses by quite a few of them. But, you know, as in a lot of ways, the same way that people talk about Charleston as being a great, you know, tournament, that's a good transition tournament from hard court to clay. People say the same thing about Stuttgart because it is pretty quick, that tournament, that it's a good transition. Madrid is also a tournament that has in the past been pretty good to hard court players. But for me, looking at this draw in the bottom half, the one name that jumps out to me is Simona Halep. Number three seed opens up against Kristina Pliskova, which could be dangerous, except that Pliskova is in the final of the Prague Open. So she might arrive to Madrid a bit tired. And there are adjustments that you do have to make in order to play well at this tournament right off the bat. Then Halep could face either Daria Kasatkina or Roberta Vinci. Then potential third round against Samantha Stosur, who she took care of very easily here last year in Madrid. And then, you know, potentially a Joe Konta, possibly Lara Ziegemund, who Konta opens up against, which is just, I tell you, that Joe Konta, she gets some pretty tough draws at these big tournaments, I have to say. But she does open against Lara Ziegemund. Also, Wozniacki is looming up there. You also have Coco Vandeweghe, Carlos Suarez Navarro. So all of that, those are the names that she could potentially face en route to the semifinal. So yeah, to me, this draw, this bottom half of the draw, I think it would be very, very disappointing for Simona Halep to fall short of the semifinals. I think this is a very good draw for her to get that far. From there, as we know, everything's a bit of a coin flip, just given on form and everything. But that's my take on the bottom half of the draw. I see Simona Halep having another good clay court run.
Yeah, Simona's an interesting case. You know, I think you and I were both talking about the tiebreak tennis exhibition yesterday and sort of having ambivalent feelings towards the format and the spectacle. And I think it's the thing about exhibition tennis, particularly something like this, where it was set up to be pretty competitive. It certainly wasn't the hit and giggle that you might get from like a kid's day or something else. Where, I mean, I think you can really take what you want from exo tennis as a player. I mean, I think some players definitely are able to bring their best at them more than others, maybe like a Sharapova, for example, who's never traditionally played great in exhibition tennis. But I think Simona winning an event like that is sort of kind of important for her and sort of something that she can take positive things away from. Like you said, she feels like she's into the tournament, even though she's yet to actually play a match. And it's interesting to see her in the same section as Stosur. I really feel like that win against Sam in Miami was really what kind of turned things around for her, even though she ended up losing to Konta fairly shortly thereafter. But
it was Stosur kind of did to her, she did to Konta in terms of a bit of a collapse.
Yeah, I mean, it was not even funny the way Halep really had her way with Stozer in that third set. I mean, the winners she was hitting, the way she was serving, the emotions, the positivity you were seeing from her in that third set was really something that I think she was pleasantly surprised to see so soon in her quote-unquote comeback after being off from the Middle East swing with injury and having a tough start to the season. So I feel like she's in a space where I think she's kind of ready to succeed on clay again. I think the last couple of years, she, as I think I've said to you in the Clay Court Power Rankings podcast, that I feel like we were starting to see a shift with Simona where she was maybe seeing herself more as a hard court player than a clay court player. Certainly the results she'd been having over the last few years since making the French Open final were more hard court, fast court focused. So I think she's seeing this as an opportunity to really succeed. I mean, obviously other than winning Madrid last year, but I think this is kind of an opportunity for her to kind of reassess her resume and her abilities as sort of an all court player, the way that we saw her in 2014, going back to Konta and Wozniacki. I think it's been tough for both of them. I think the last few weeks, not only on a surface that's not been traditionally the most fruitful for them, but kind of running into their own nemesis. I mean, Anastasia Savastova is a player who's already beaten Konta twice recently, beat her at the US Open en route to the quarterfinals, and then just beat her in Stuttgart. And then Wozniacki really having some issues solving Yelena Ostapenko, who hit a crazy 70 winners against her this week in Prague to beat her in a third set tiebreak after already losing to her in Charleston. But yeah, and then finally going down to Karolina Pliskova, I've been kind of unpleasantly surprised with how she's performed in the last few weeks, kind of, you know, getting some tough opponents, getting a surprising opponent in Camilla Giorgi, who really played some great tennis to knock her out pretty quickly in Prague. I think I was feeling sort of optimistic the way she was talking about clay, or at least the way David Katiza, her coach, was talking to her about her ability to play on clay. I do think that when you think of a lot of French Open champions of the last decade or so, you do think of big hitters who hit the ball pretty flat. And so in that respect, there's no reason to think that Pliskova can't eventually have success on this surface, opening against Alessia Cerenko, who is unfortunately yet to win a match since winning Acapulco. So that's perhaps an opportunity for her to kind of ease her way into the draw, potentially getting a Savastova in the second round, and even maybe a Barbara Strzitzova, who made the semifinals of Prague this week, and we'll have a few days to kind of shake off that results. And then also you have to think of the Muguruza-Baczynski matchup, where you'd think that would be more even, but I think Muguruza has really had her way with Tomea in most of their meetings, given the way the things are projecting. You know, you might give Baczynski perhaps a bit more of a shot, although she did take a tough loss to Cici Bellis this week in Rabat. Yeah, it definitely feels like Halep is the one to beat in this half of the draw, but definitely some dangerous floaters, maybe not as many as in the top half.
Are you seriously not going to mention Elena Vesnina? Are you choosing to do this?
I'm choosing not to mention her because I did not mention her in Indian Wells, and I did not hype her. And she ended up winning the title. So, I mean, she has not really done, in fairness, other than beating clay court magician Daria Kasatkina, who probably only lost to her because, like, they're friends. And Dasha seems like the kind of player to not do well against a friend. You know, I would be remiss in really pumping her up, especially against Begu, who I feel like there are a few clay courters in that section who could really bring the hammer down, if we're being honest. So wow. this is an evening of honesty right now on the WTN Center podcast.
Yeah, I gotta say, you turn these mics on and David Kane tempers himself, because that is not what he was saying about 45 minutes ago. So noted. Interesting. Yeah, so I mean, the bottom half of the draw, you know, who knows? And getting back to Pliskova, it's interesting because at All Access Hour today, you know, she was being very, as Karolina is, and is one of the things that I find so endearing about her and why I like talking about Karolina, is just she's incredibly self-aware and she's under no delusions ever. So she was making a lot of self-deprecating jokes about her inability to play on the surface. And so finally I just said, you know, Karolina, do you expect of yourself the same level of success on clay as you do on hard court, your favorite surface? Like, do you expect it? And she said, yeah, I do. And I think that's a problem. You know, that she kind of was laughing about it. She's like, I know I shouldn't, but that's just how my mind works. I do expect myself to get these wins. I do get frustrated when I lose. I don't think, oh, it's clay, and so don't worry about it. I do think that, you know, I absolutely 100% agree with the assessment that, you know, obviously hitters can win the French Open. It's why, generally speaking, I've been in, you know, very similar to what you said with Pliskova in terms of I would not be surprised to see her win the French Open eventually. I would say the same thing about like a Madison Keys, who I've, as you know, I've always been very, very, you know, big on.
Bullish.
Yeah, very bullish about her prospects on clay. Maybe not immediately, but over time. And you know, even Akanta today, she said, look, I actually really do like playing on clay, but movement is an issue for me on it. And this, you know, maybe it's going to take me a few seasons to get there. You know, every season I have to build more and more and get, you know. And so I kind of feel the same way about Pliskova a little bit. As much as the big hitters are great on clay, and can obviously be successful, obviously when you look at a player like Maria Sharapova, or even you look at Serena Williams's late success, you know, in her career at the French Open, you're talking about players who figured out their movement on the surface. And that's something that obviously, you know, players like a Pliskova, like a Keys, and like Konta are still working out. And until they really get over that hump and can embrace it, it'll I think it'll still continue to be a challenge. But I think that it's you know, it's not that far away. I mean, I think that, you know, 3 years out, 4 years out, and they're all, you know, young players, you know, they could be right up there in the mix. So, yeah, so that's breaking down the draw at the 2017 Mutual Madrid Open. And before we close, matches to watch. Obviously, the first round gets underway in about 12 hours from when we're recording this podcast. So, but David, obviously, in addition to a lot of great first round matches that we have in store, you know, we got Vinci Kasatkina, which has always been an interesting and fraught head to head there. We also obviously have, as we mentioned, Sharapova Lucic Baroni, which is going to be a very big first round match. You also have Bellis Gavrilova, which could be an interesting one as well. And then Konta Ziegemund also as a big one. But what are the matches you want to see early on? I mean, we can talk about projected quarterfinals and semifinals and finals all we want, but first round, second round, third round, what's a matchup that you're like, gosh, I really hope that happens.
I mean, you know, looking right at the top, right off the top, I mean, I do think this is a good opportunity perhaps for a CC Bellis to maybe really start performing. You should really get a first really big premier mandatory results on clay. I know she was playing in Rabat. It was her first ever red clay event of her career, if you could believe it. And she managed to get a win over Tomea Baczynski in the process. And that does seem a kind of matchup that could potentially give Anastasia Pavlyuchenkova trouble, particularly if she's still feeling a little bit fatigued from her run at the Grand Prix de Sar, La Princesse, La Mariam in Marrakesh. Pavlyuchenkova has like a weird history of kind of losing these matches to like the Alison Risks, to the Madison Brengels, to the Vanya Kings. And so like I was a little surprised to see her dig out of that match against Lauren Davis, because it would have been very on brand for Pavlyuchenkova to lose that match and was down a break in the third set of that one. In terms of other second rounders, I'll definitely be curious to see if we can get a match between Carla Suarez Navarro and Caroline Wozniacki, or even perhaps a Niculescu. Either one of those would certainly be interesting. And then looking down, you know, obviously Halep and Kasatkina would be sort of an insider special, two players who we've certainly been enchanted by, particularly on the clay courts. And so that would be a moment to see Kasatkina drawing a big name on red clay. I think they've only played once before. I believe it was in Miami last year, and Halep sort of had her way with her in that match. And then, you know, going down, it'd be interesting to see how Schiavone can pull up. You know, is currently undefeated on red clay for a player who was, you know, dangerously close to not getting into the main draw of the French Open on her ranking, has turned that one around, winning a title in Bogota, and perhaps in line to win the title in Rabat, is a wild card and could play either Begu, a really good clay court player, or Beznina in the second round. And finally, I think Anastasia Savastova perhaps could be a player to pull off the upset against Karolina Pliskova if she still doesn't have her clay court legs under her. Savastova having a quietly good start to the season, making the semifinals, right, in Dubai, has kind of held up the run that started for her at the U.S. Open last year. So that would be an interesting one. Certainly a player who is comfortable on clay, sort of few indie matches on my roster, but those are ones I'm looking after.
I like it. Yeah, a couple of others that stand out to me. I mean, I'm a little bit curious about a Mladenovic Puig match. I think that mm-hmm. could be interesting. I mean, I thought that, I know it's just the tiebreak 10s, it's an exhibition, but I was actually pretty impressed by how Monica Puig was hitting the ball in the course of that. So she did beat Sharapova in their opening tiebreak, as it were. So the nomenclature on that thing is tough. Is it a match? Is it a tiebreak? What's going on?
And is undefeated against Sharapova in exhibitions. I think she beat her in their Puerto Rico matchup as well earlier in the year.
Well, that's a stat right there. She did. So Mladenovic Puig, I think, could be a potentially interesting one. And then, not that I wish this on Johanna Konta, because I do hope that she does kind of get a clay game together and is able to get through. But a Ziegemund Vandeweghe second round, I kind of want to see it. Not going to lie. You know, Ziegemund will just, you know, as she's told me in our champs corner, or as I at least told her, I describe her as a lot of things. One of the things is a disruptor. She has this amazing way of just driving her opponent's batty. With the drop shots, with, you know, kind of the guile, some of the passing shots, the lobs, things like that. So I'd kind of like to see that and see what would happen there. But she would have to get past Konta in the first round. And who knows where Ziegemund and how she's feeling, you know, after that emotional and physically grueling week in Stuttgart. So, yeah, so those are the ones that jump out to me. But, you know, I think it's going to be a very fun weekend in Madrid. This is going to be the first time, obviously, that we get a really good look at what is effectively, you know, kind of the full field as you know, they'll go from here and on to Rome. And it'll be a very, very similar looking field next week as everybody kind of puts in their final last minute tune-ups before the French Open. But I don't know. Do you have any predictions? Not in terms of players and who's going to win, but what's your prediction for this tournament? What do you think we're going to see?
I do think we're going to perhaps start to see the field of French Open favorites come together. I think clay court season is typically hard to handicap because I feel like there are a few false starts along the way. I mean, the first tournament of the quote unquote clay court season is on green clay. The second one is on an indoor red clay, which both of which haven't necessarily been immediately indicative of French Open success. You know, even this tournament has been, you know, sometimes more correlated to Wimbledon success than French Open success. So there's that to contend with. But I do feel like in a big draw where everybody's showing up, except Agnieszka Radwanska, but everybody else is going to be here. And so I feel like this is really where we're going to start seeing things separate and the field sort of narrow down as to who can actually win the French Open title, and or at least who has the best chance or some of the best chances. So I think that's where we're going to start to see. I don't predict anything specific, but I do think in general, I think the players who make it out of these early rounds are going to be the ones that are probably going to continue that momentum through the clay court season.
But yeah, it's insane to think that the second major of the season is just weeks away. That seems awfully close to me. But yeah, this week in Madrid, hopefully we're going to leave Madrid. All I want is that we leave Madrid with more answers than questions.
And that's a wrap on this episode of the WTA Insider Podcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, or on any podcast app of your choice to ensure you never miss an episode when they go live. Reviews are always helpful, so if you like what you've heard so far, please do leave us one. And you can get new episode alerts by following us on Twitter at WTA_insider. And we'll, of course, post the podcast on the WTA website at WTATennis.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you soon.